Welcome back to the Everything is a Primary Source podcast. We're continuing with a review of sorts of the second half of season two with part two Palooza, the second parts of the second part of the season. These summer episodes can stand alone as great pop culture conversations, but if you'd like some more context, head on back to earlier in the year to hear part one. Today's part two, for instance, is attached to February 16th episode dissecting 1977's Saturday Night Fever. When he's not in front of the camera, Kevin Higgins hosts a podcast called I Help Make That, a show dedicated to learning from the cast and crew members of movies and TV shows themselves about the stories they've helped tell. So who better to talk to get the inside scoop behind how and why this iconic 70s film was made and what it can tell us about the time period. You know, it's such an iconic thing whenever I, you know, because again, I grew up in the 80s and 90s and we were more familiar with all the spoofs and the, you know, adding little, like there's a scene in The Simpsons when Bart is strutting down the street to, you know, staying alive, or, you know, people dressing in that, you know, famous white suit as like a joke that they are a disco stud, you know, that kind of thing. But for the time period, that was your going out clothes. That was the place you were going when you went dancing. It wasn't an odd thing in 1976, 77, 78. Going out for the night, that's where you ended up. It wasn't like you were like, I'm going to go disco dancing. It was just if you're going out to a club, that's the kind of club you went to. And so when it comes to the question of, you know, for the movie, who's the intended audience? On the one hand, you might think, oh, it was for other disco attendees, but not necessarily. Just really anybody likes a good story. You know, would you say that there is just, and it's an adult audience that it was after, but was there anything more to it than that?
Well, yeah. What else I thought was interesting is that, you know, we talked about this a little bit before, but it also tackled some pretty heavy themes that I wouldn't say it may have, you know, we're talking about the 70s here. So, you know, so of course, you know, attitudes have evolved and changed. And, you know, so there are some outdated ideas in this movie, but it still managed to tackle some pretty heavy themes, at least as the movie, at least when you consider its time.
Yeah,
pretty well, like sort of racism and misogyny.
Yeah,
you know, and like, you know, many movies around this time kind of either condoned or just sort of downplayed those behaviors. But, you know, in this movie, actually, like they're like these like Tony's and his friends sort of attitudes towards like, you know, people who aren't, you know, Italian American, mm-hmm. or towards women are not viewed as a good thing.
Right. And it's not necessarily, you know, coming down on it one way or the other. It doesn't seem like the movie is trying to condone or condemn. It's just kind of showing it as is, you know, just kind of the status of it. And so in that regard, and again, it goes back to our original thesis of this movie is not meant to dress up anything, you know, or if it is, it's to very clearly show that things were dressed up in the 70s and such, that it's a much darker movie than it lets on, that it has some toughness to it. And if it was another time period that it was portraying, you know, they would still be these macho tough guys that had these attitudes. They would just look different and spend their evenings doing something totally different than going out to a club.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Yeah, and it's funny because this one has a sequel to it, you know, Staying Alive, which was a Sylvester Stallone directed picture and has very close to nothing to do with the original movie. It doesn't seem, as far as thematic wise, it seems, you know, more to do with just, you know, how ridiculous you know, showmanship disco became. But, you know, whenever I think of Saturday Night Fever, I always think about the bridge scene with the guy falling off the bridge is terrifying and like totally unexpected in that movie. And, you know, you can't get much more dark and sad than that, than having somebody drop to their death, you know, after the mm-hmm. interaction that he has.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that scene in particular is perfect for, you know, what we're talking about, because it is sort of, you know, how they were just targeting these this Latino gang that actually wasn't even kind of just trying to mind their own business. Mm-hmm. If that was enough, that really sort of helped. That whole scene in particular drives home on just how sort of awful these guys are. And it's mm-hmm. sort of like and I think that it, you know, like that whole subplot with Bobby, like trying to figure out what to do, you know, cause he had gotten the girl pregnant and deciding yeah. he'd rather just kill himself. It's kind of another turning point, especially with, well, unfortunately what happened with Annette, which I won't, you know, Annette Donna Pescow's character, which I won't spoil. yeah. Actually, you know what? That scene in general is doubly hard to watch because, you know, I grew up in the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. So I know Donna Pescow mainly as the mom in Even Stevens.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So it is kind of, it feels weird seeing her in such a different type of movie, and especially mm-hmm. such a different type of role. And then, okay, I'll just say it, seeing her get raped.
Right. It's not an easy topic whatsoever. And yeah, it I guess that shows the mark of a outstanding actress, though, you know, that you can do something that I almost want to say intimate, but not really intimate in the right way, just, you know, vulnerable, and then go on to do completely different stuff, you know, later in your career. And there's a few actors from that film that kind of follow that same. I mean, Fran Drescher is the nanny, you know, later on. She's, you know, totally different. And even Travolta, you know, one of my favorite, to add some levity after talking about that, one of my favorite all-time Saturday Night Live opening monologues comes from John Travolta. Right after Pulp Fiction came out, he does this great monologue where he talks about how, you know, over the years, ever since he left Welcome Back, Kotter, they kept trying to get him to do SNL and he was busy doing other stuff. And throughout the monologue, he keeps taking on different roles from his different movies. Like, you know, just kind of like somebody just hands him a baby. He's like, oh, look who's talking. And then, you know, he puts a, you know, cowboy hat on, like urban cowboy. And, you know, he's just going through all the different characters. And at the very end, you know, he's like, oh, you know, things are always looking up, and he does the pose from Saturday Night Fever, and there's the disco ball that lowers behind him. And, you know, it's like that, you know, somebody like him, he did struggle in a way to get away from that 70s label to him. I've heard some people say that in Pulp Fiction, the scene where his character Vincent Vega gets it from Bruce Willis's character is a symbolic of the 80s action hero killing the 70s star, literally in that movie, you know, because of who it is that does, you know, what to the other. And it all starts with Saturday Night Fever, ultimately, you know, with Travolta in that. And yeah, if you haven't seen that monologue, check it out, because it is hilarious the way he brings it all together. But when it comes to the time period, would it have been very odd for the 1970s to conclude without making this particular movie? Like, would it have been an incomplete movie lineup for the time period if Saturday Night Fever had never come out?
Well, I don't. I mean, I do think it is a very. It is a movie in that sort of has timeless themes, but is in many ways entrenched in its decade. In fact, it even references things that are so specific to the 70s. I was like, I like had to like pause the movie and look up the reference on Google. Like at one point they reference Laurence Olivier doing Polaroid commercials. And I was like,
okay.
What? Yeah. And I had to pause. It was like Laurence Olivier Polaroid commercial. However, because there were so many strong movies coming out in the 70s, I do think if this movie, you know, as entrenched in its decade as it is, had come out, if this movie hadn't come out in the 70s, but was like instead came out in like the 2000s or 2010s and was just set in the 70s, or if it had not come out at all, I do think the 70s still would have survived and it would still be seen as a great period for movies.
Yeah. No, I like the way you put that because, if it had a disco movie come out anytime after the disco era, it wouldn't have been as serious as Saturday Night Fever. It would have definitely poked fun at it because almost as soon as disco was stopping a fad, everyone was like, yeah, I never did that. Never disco dance. No, I never dressed like that. You know, they wanted to separate themselves from disco a lot, but because this movie came out when it did in the fashion that it did, it actually does us a service because in some ways it's very descriptive of true disco culture. It doesn't have that silliness to it that, you know, didn't take long, as I showed you before I hit record, of Grover from Sesame Street dressed up as Tony doing all the moves. It didn't take long before people were like, you know, disco is goofy. Disco is not, you know, real music, and disco sucks, as, you know, they all chanted not a few years later. But so in some ways, yeah, I think it's right that they got this one done before the era was over. Otherwise, it would have come out really, really silly and ridiculous and poking fun at disco rather than telling a story like this one did.
I think it depends on like the decade. Like, I think if it had come out in the 80s or 90s, it would have been more like you said, like trying to poke fun and make fun of it.
Mm-hmm.
If it had come out in like the 2000s, there's a chance, or even 2010s.
Yeah.
You know, there's more of a chance it might have, and, you know, was very far removed from the disco period. There's more of a chance it might have been similar in tone.
We are thinking on the same wavelength. You definitely read my mind about that, because that's kind of where I go with when people make period movies, you know, when they make movies, TV shows about previous time periods, you always have to ask, why are you telling this story about the past when you are? And the 70s had plenty of historic movies, you know, movies about history. And you ask every time you watch them, like, why are you making this movie about this time period in the 70s? And with the early 2000s or even today, you're right. I think that if they made a movie that was set in the 70s, and they are making them, you know, quite often, actually, you're right. I think they would have taken, you know, the joke out of disco wouldn't be there as much. It would have been much more seriously, you know, just the setting for it, because that's what Saturday Night Fever did. It was like, this is just the setting for the story. It wasn't about, you know, showing disco off other than just being like, you know, the scenery of, you know, kind of the symbolism, you know, for everything. So I can't thank you enough for making this come together. I want to say it's almost record time from me putting out feelers, being like, hey, anybody want to do a podcast? To then somebody saying yes. And then not only that, saying, here's our topic and let's go for it. So thank you, Kevin, for joining the Everything is a Primary Source podcast. Where can people find you and your podcast and other projects online?
So you can find me on Instagram at Kevin Liam Higgins, or you can find me on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. You can type in anchor.fm/ihelpmakethat, or just find my episodes on YouTube.
And just like this program itself, I think when you listen, watch and listen, however, you're going to get a much closer look, a much more scrutinized version of your favorite movies and TV shows. So I think our combined efforts here, me doing the primary source show and you doing the I Help Make That program, are doing a service to popular culture and media by digging in that much deeper. And so thank you again, Kevin, for joining the EPS podcast, where everything, including Saturday Night Fever, is a primary source.
You're welcome.
It's amazing what a difference a few months can make in the internet world. Back in February, I was still touting my website as epspodcast.club. You can still go there, but the better landing spot is everythinghistory.com. There you'll have access to the podcast, all my socials, not to mention my educational consulting and podcast coaching and enrichment offerings. So go check out www.everythinghistory.com. That's everything-history.com.